And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I am your host, Richard Dugan, and this program comes your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streamed live at those times. We put the podcasts on the radio show's page at richarddugan.com, as well as SoundCloud and iTunes. So we encourage you to also go to our guests' link, their website, to continue your edification and education. We hope that you will have a lot of fun doing so. We are going to have a lot of fun here on this program because, and we always do. I mean, there are some programs that we have done over the years. We've actually had some that have gotten kind of heavy as far as the general subject matter, and we try to lighten it up a little bit. That's just kind of the way that it goes. We just want to let you know that we are here and we are excited to have you with us. And again, we do hope that you will avail yourselves of the information that our guests have. Our guest today is returning after a little over two years. It's been 2 years since she's been on our program. And the last time she was here, we talked about money. We talked about the path to wealth. And what that all meant, or means, I should say, because it's still relevant today. But today, it's a little different. Not by that much, but still, it's very relevant for our day and time. We're going to be talking about a formula that you cannot combine in some kind of a laboratory somewhere, unless you consider your inner self that laboratory, which, you know, it's not a bad idea. We're going to talk about the gratitude formula with our returning guest, Mae McCarthy. Mae, thank you so much for rejoining us here on the program.
Oh, Richard, thank you so much for having me on. It's nice to be back.
And the beautiful thing is that I have absolutely nothing that I have to beg forgiveness for. Now, let me ask you about that phrase right there. Is it appropriate for us to use that term to beg forgiveness, not only of others, but of ourselves? Or should we maybe put a little different spin on that? Because, you know, we're trying to live better lives. We're trying to evolve as an individual as well as a species, if we can. And we're trying to make this world a better place for ourselves and everyone around us. And begging just doesn't seem to me to be real, you know, appropriate.
Well, and you're right. I mean, think about when you're begging for anything. You're seeing it as impossible to have, which is why you're begging for it. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking about the possibility of not receiving it, which is another reason that you're begging for it. You don't have confidence that you're going to get it, so you're adding more emotional weight and more attention on really not having it.
Yeah, I get you.
You want something to change. And here's the thing about humans. Whatever we put our attention on, good or bad, if we start talking about, thinking about, and feeling about something that we want or something that we don't want, whatever we're putting our attention on tends to manifest. So that idea of begging for forgiveness is really focusing on why you are begging for it in the first place. You're already feeling bad about having done something. And as you continue to focus on that feeling, whatever it is that your attention is on is going to grow. So what you need to do is see forgiveness as a way to just make room for something that's better. You know, we don't make mistakes. None of us make mistakes. We just have learning experiences.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't make, everyone else does, but not me.
I know that to be true. Yeah,
well, there are those who actually have that attitude that it's not me, it's you, you know, the reality is, I always find it humorous when I hear of individuals who are marrying for the third or fourth or fifth or sixth time. And if it's a guy, well, it doesn't matter, guy or gal. Well, he or she, she was the problem. Every one of my ex-wives, they were the problem. And I often think, oh, there is one common denominator in that equation, and that's you.
Yeah, well, that can be true. Yeah. I mean, I know lots of people who have been married several times, and each time that they got married, they learned what they was there to
mm-hmm.
learn.
Yeah,
and they don't see it as a bad thing. They just changed.
Right, right.
And circumstances changed, and they ended the relationship. And even in amicable situations, I mean, it still hurts to end a relationship.
Oh,
no matter what.
I could not agree with you more.
They don't
that,
blame
yeah.
anyone.
Yeah. Which is, I know that when we talk about, and again, we're talking about the gratitude formula, and that's a huge element that a lot of folks, they it's not that they're ungrateful, but it's like they're almost like neutral. You know, they're neither grateful nor ungrateful. It's just what is, you know. Whereas every time I turn around and I have something that happens to me, more specifically of a positive nature, and so forth, I'm grateful. Hey, thank you very much. I greatly appreciate. A, you know, you're being on the program. B, sharing us all this information to the PR firm for providing the review copy of the book, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't seem like much, but, well, hey, I need all this stuff in order for these interviews to be anything at all, you know? And so it's like, that's just what is. But it seems as though that attitude is not prevailing across our society these days. There are people who are doing it, yourself, myself. But as a people, we don't seem to be as grateful until there are, say, natural disasters. We here in California dealing with wildfires this summer, whether it's a hurricane that hits the Gulf Coast or the East Coast. Now I'm hearing that because the ocean temperatures are warming, the West Coast might start to experience some hurricanes. That's really an exciting thought. Should I be grateful? And we're not necessarily grateful for those conditions, the wildfires and the storms and the earthquakes and those kinds of things. But how would we address something like that? Are we grateful if we survived it? Are we grateful if our friends? Are we grateful for these storms and these events, these incidents that happen in our lives? And hopefully they don't happen often, but how do we address that?
Well, first of all, I think something that people misunderstand is they think that if you feel grateful, you should be grateful. And gratitude is a choice. I mean, think about the times that you've chosen to love someone, but you didn't particularly like them. You didn't feel very loving towards them, but it was just you love them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, gratitude's the same way. You can choose to be grateful, and then you hope that the feelings of happiness and things like that follow. So in the midst of a disaster or a tragedy, you may have to look at it from a lot and lots of different ways in order to find something to choose to be grateful for. Mm-hmm. Number one, you might say, I choose to be grateful that we've now been able to predict when, because of all of our experience over, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of years of fighting wildfires, we can now predict how a fire is going to behave and therefore have advanced warning so that people can get out of the way of the fire and not lose their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, many, many years ago, if a fire happened, you didn't have the communication that we have today. You didn't have the experience that we have today that would warn people in time, and in entire towns would be killed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So there's something to be grateful for. And you know, with a cancer diagnosis, you know, we're learning more and more about cancer.
Mm-hmm.
We're learning more and more about how to detect it early enough to be able to treat it and be cured, and to prevent even worse cancer outbreaks and to extend life. So, I mean, that's something to be grateful for in the midst of a cancer diagnosis. And it's not that you feel grateful. Oh, my gosh. No, you feel heartbreak and fear and you're scared. But you can choose to say, wow, isn't it great that I'm being diagnosed today in the 21st century versus back in the 1930s the 1940s when medicine wasn't as advanced.
Yeah. And that I do understand. I mean, I personally have not had that experience, but I have, I guess you'd call it secondhand. My second wife went through that 17 years ago and has been free and clear of it ever since. And I'm grateful for that. But also a lot of the lessons learned along the way.
Sure.
I learned that I cannot be a caregiver alone.
Right.
I can't do it myself. And, of course, that's one of the first lessons in caregiving, too. It's certainly a process. How about this one? I'm gonna keep this generic because we don't need to go there. But there's one individual that has sort of been, you might say, scraping across the chalkboard with their fingernails and has just been driving me nuts for 2.5 years, almost 3 years. And I promised myself before that period of time started that I was not even going to care. And somehow I got sucked in and I finally came to a place. And I have to tell you, to say it out loud in the beginning, when I first started saying this out loud, it was hard to say out loud, but I finally was able to say, I forgive you for being an irritant to me, and I forgive myself for allowing you to basically, I love this phrase, to live rent-free in my head.
That's good.
And I have to say that that has made a great deal of difference in my demeanor. There's nothing I can do about that other person. They're going to do and be and say whatever they want. They are free agents, you know, as human beings, we are all free agents to do and say and be. I can't control that. And it's eating me up inside. This is driving me crazy. And I've got to find a way to stop this, because then I'm going to be dealing with the cancers.
Repeat after me. I bless you, I forgive you, I release you.
I bless you, I forgive you, I release you.
Okay, so now you're going to need, every time that person comes to mind, you need to say that over and over and over and over again. Sometimes the first day it might take 5,000 mm-hmm. times of saying it, but the next day you only have to do it 4,990. And eventually, as you continue to do that, what's going to happen is your inner self is going to recognize that that person is done. You're releasing the chain, because right now you've got a chain that's hooked to their ankle and your ankle, and you're dragging that person around with you everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want to do is release them.
Yeah.
So that they have safe passage through your brain. Anytime you think of them, you just have no emotional reaction at all.
Yeah.
And rarely do they pop up into your head. So that mantra, I bless you, I forgive you, I release you, ends up helping you to get yourself back to a calm place. It's releasing what's taking up room within you that's relating to the thoughts of anger or disappointment or unforgiveness or resentment or anger or jealousy or pain. All those thoughts that are taking up room within you that could be replaced with things that you actually want to experience,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? That mantra ends up pouring out those thoughts and feelings and releasing them, and then you can get back to work. So you say them over and over and over again, and then you're back to a calm place and you can get back to what you want to focus on. If they pop up again into your head, you just bless them, you forgive them, you release them, and start talking about and thinking about and imagining having the life without them in it. You're not focusing any attention on them. You're just saying, here's my wonderful life. I'm healthy, I'm happy, I'm free, I'm having a blast with my radio show. I'm enjoying living in this manner. And it doesn't make any mention of them at all. I'm grateful for my free life. Hmm. As you start to focus more of your time and energy on stuff that's not related to them, and anytime they pop into your head, you use that little forgiveness mantra, eventually you won't think of them anymore unless they absolutely have to be in your life. Like I have some distant family members that I occasionally have in my life, and I just continuously focus on what I want my good life to be, and I don't have any expectations of them at all, and consequently, I can't be disappointed.
Mm. We talk an awful lot also on this program about the freedom that we have as individuals to be discriminating about the people that we have in our lives and or allow in our lives. And when we talk about that whole aspect, I mean, you just kind of described that. I'm not that I grew up necessarily in a Norman Rockwell kind of home. And folks, if you don't know who Norman Rockwell was or his drawings, look it up, Google it. But I did not have those dysfunctional Thanksgiving dinners or Christmas dinners or holiday dinners, you know, that you see in the movies and on TV. You know, and we all still get along really well. We all have our own separate lives. I have to say that what really struck me was, and this goes back maybe 4 or 5 years, that when we were all in our 50s, all six of us. My folks are in their 80s, and the kids are all in their 50s. Now we're all going to be heading towards all being in our 60s in the next 5 or 6 years, which is... it's astounding to me because I still remember when we were all kids running around. But my brother and I, we've had our little situations over the years when, as we were growing up and even as adults, but that's never gotten in the way of us relating with one another. And it seems to me like that's the best place to be, is working stuff out. But sometimes you can't, like you say, you know, you have those kinds of situations. When we are going through, and your book in particular, your book deals with 7 steps that you talk about in terms of the 7 success. It's a 7-step success system. Well, that's easy to say. Great alliteration, I must say. To create a life that you love. And I want to dive into that real quickly. To create the life that you love, back in 2008, 2009, when we went through in this country, and I guess it was somewhat global, economic downturn, thousands and thousands of people in this country lost their jobs, right? And one of the first thoughts that came to my mind was, I wonder how many of those people really hated their job, hated what they did. And they only did it because, oh, maybe it was because it was a family business, or, well, you know, my dad was a bricklayer, and his dad, and so forth, or whatever the job was. And then many of these people went off to an entrepreneurial businesses, and this is part of also what you work with people in terms of entrepreneurism, entrepreneurial ventures just exploded over the next few years. And actually continue to do so, because people are realizing I don't have to work for someone else and do what I don't like doing. These 7 steps to create a life that you love, this is tied into one's life's purpose?
Well, purpose is one of the steps. So the 7 steps, the first one is using a daily practice, which first thing in the morning, you need to focus on what you do want your life to be like, what goals you want to achieve in each area of your life. That would be your health, your relationships, your finances, your use of skills and talents, either through work or volunteering or your role in life, you know, as a parent or a spouse, whatever you're using your time and talents for. You want to have a peaceful inner connection with whatever that inner wisdom or that source is for you. You want to have balanced recreation, a balanced lifestyle. So there are about six major areas of your life, and you want to revisit your desired outcomes for each of those areas every single morning. It takes about 20, 25 minutes. So that's the first step, is to use a daily practice. The second step is to use powerful goal statements. A lot of people talk about what they want, and even some talk about what they don't want, thinking that they're talking about what they want, and then they're surprised at the outcome. I remember having a salesperson, she used to say, I really hope that I'm not late for an appointment and make a bad impression. She thought she was wanting to be on time and make a good impression, but her words were focusing on what she didn't want. And many of us do that. And here's the deal about our subconscious. All it does is make a picture of our words. And her words ended up making a picture of being late and making a bad impression. And so consequently, she was always last in the lineup of salespeople who were successful for our company. Mm. As soon as I met with her and I showed her how her words were playing out, she changed them. And she would start saying, I'm so grateful that I'm always on time or early for my appointments. And I always am able to articulate a fair exchange of value with customers, and they appreciate it. When she started to do that, within 4 months, she was top of the sales ladder and making more sales than everybody else.
Wow.
So we have to be very, very careful about what words we choose. That's the second step. The third is to choose goals that are right for you. How many of us are doing things because other people ask us to? Other people tell us, oh, you'd be so good at this, or oh, I could use your help at this. And it's really not something that we think we're good at, and nor is it something that we want to do.
Hmm.
So if it's not required by our work or our role in life, like a parent or spouse, then we need to really carefully evaluate whether that's the right goal for us and whether we would find joy, satisfaction, and fulfillment in doing what's being asked of us. There's so many people that go around and agree to do things for other people and then are filled with resentment and anger. And when you're filled up with that kind of emotion, you don't have any room to receive what you want in life. The fourth step is really interesting. Our brains remember every single time we've had a goal in the past that we did not achieve and how disappointed we were. So in an effort to try and protect us, it sometimes puts those creative, innovative, and spiritually intuitive messages on mute. Because if we have a goal that's bigger than anything we've experienced before or different than anything we've experienced before, our brain knows that we don't really believe that it's possible to have that. So it waits until we shift our belief to be one of possibility. And this has actually been proven scientifically. In our brains, we have these things called neural pathways. And they're deeply grooved into our brains, these kind of ruts, these grooves in our brain that are associated with very strong beliefs and behaviors that we've created over a lifetime. Like if we're a really great singer, but our family told us all throughout childhood that it was foolish to sing for money, then our desire to be a paid singer later in life is going to be met with our brain putting those opportunities and possibilities on mute for us to take steps to get there, no matter how great a singer we are. Until we shift our possibility and shift our belief into possibility, we're not going to see any opportunities to take steps. And so in that case, what we need to do is go meet a whole bunch of other singers that are getting paid to sing. So recognize that your brain loves you and that all you need to do is start to find possibility, belief-shifting stories about other people achieving what you want. And after you read a bunch of those stories and after you meet some of those people and learn their journeys, you're going to recognize, wow, if they could do it, I could do it. And then your brain will take those innovative and creative messages off mute. The fifth is to be patient. You know, we live in a society that is instant gratification. If I want something, I can order it online right now, and it'll be at my door today.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to that. But that's not necessarily how things happen in terms of achieving goals. We have to be patient as we're going through this process of articulating our goals, the outcomes that we want, and looking for these intuitive messages that will guide and direct us to take steps to achieve them.
I'd like patience. I like patience, and I'd like it right now, please.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last two, the sixth step is to be disciplined. Mm. We know that we've used systems for success in our past. For instance, do you remember learning how to drive a car?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You were not an expert at driving a car the first time you got behind the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
You used a repetitive practice. I like to say repetition reaps rewards. You used a repetitive practice every day to practice, and you made what you wanted familiar and welcome by seeing other people driving. You talked to your friends that were learning to drive. You saw your family members drive. You saw people all over the roadway learning and driving expertly. Now, can't you drive home from work or someplace that you go off, and can't you drive home and not remember in giant pieces of your drive home? You've used repetition in making what you wanted familiar and welcome to master driving. You did the same thing with reading. You were not an expert at reading when you first tried, and now you can probably skim entire pages and get the same understanding. You weren't an expert at typing on that keyboard that's in, you know, the typewriter keyboard that's not even in alphabetical order, but now you can probably type as fast as some people can talk. Mm-hmm. And you were not an expert at so many different things, like riding a bike. You had to use repetition and making what you wanted familiar and welcome to be able to master the situation. So that's what you want to do for step six, is mm-hmm. be disciplined. Make sure you use this repetitive goal attainment practice every single day. And then finally, step seven is to discover your purpose. This is the why that you're here to do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
When you discover your purpose, everything else seems to line up. Jack Canfield, Dr. Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, I mean, so many successful people, Oprah Winfrey, Steven Spielberg, I mean, lots and lots of successful people say that life is just easier when you know your purpose and you start living in alignment with that. All of your goals seem to be in relation to your purpose. And if you're an entrepreneur like me, who has grown eight different companies, my largest was over $100 million in annual revenues, what you tend to do as an entrepreneur is bring your purpose into your work. My purpose since I was 12 is to bless others or help others be successful and to be successful.
Mm.
And in my companies, it's been the same purpose. And Ernst & Young actually proved through funding a study that was published in the Harvard Business Review, they proved that companies that have a clearly defined purpose statement, the why that they exist, tend to be more profitable. And just to give you an example of this, you know the Kellogg's company.
Mm-hmm.
They manufacture and distribute food products.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. But if you look at their purpose statement, it says that the why that they exist is to nourish families so they can flourish and thrive. Imagine being an employee working for a manufacturing and distribution company, or an employee working for a company that nourishes families so they can flourish and thrive. Which company would you be more motivated to work for? Probably the one with purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's been the case in my companies. My last company, our purpose was to save lives. But what we did was manufacture equipment and software to automate drug distribution processes in hospitals. But because of what we did, we were able to get barcodes on all the drugs and consequently validate that the right drug was getting to the right patient at the bedside.
Yeah.
That's why we existed, to save lives. But what we did was radically different. But because my developers knew that they were saving lives, they were more motivated, more creative, more innovative to come up with solutions to help our hospital customers to do their jobs. So all stakeholders get much more excited when they're working for a company that has purpose versus a company that's just trying to make a profit. Those are your seven steps.
Absolutely. And in spite of the fact that there are companies, their bottom line is the bottom line, their purpose is the bottom line, and they seem to be really, really successful. But then you start taking a look at some of their practices. I mean, we've heard of a particular financial institution that's been in the news multiple times over the last few years. You know, it started back in the 1800s, and of course their commercials, you know, talk about this, and you know, and they say all these kinds of different things, and yet they make it in the news again because they did something that was supposed to increase their profits, that was supposed to increase their profitability for their shareholders. I've always had the attitude and the perspective in light of what you've said, May, and that is, and sometimes I get a little sidetracked, and you know we all do, but my main focus has always been, if I am working for someone on a project that they've asked me to produce, I am doing it not to make myself successful, but to make them successful, because if they are successful, then I am successful. You know, it doesn't work well the other way. You know, I mean, I suppose that the other aspect of it too is that we do not get where we are. You, May, didn't get where you are today all on your own. You didn't do it all yourself.
I couldn't.
Exactly.
And no one can. And that's why having a clearly defined purpose statement is consistent with engaging all of your stakeholders. You know, it was really funny. In my last business, I created these business cards for each of my employees. And on the back of the business card was their job description, and everybody had the same job. But they all had different tasks.
Ah.
So the developers had tasks of developing software. The salespeople had tasks of selling, you know, that sort of thing. But everyone's job was the same, and that was to work towards the success of their coworkers, their customers, their suppliers and vendors, and everyone related to our business in our world. And if they did that, they would be successful in return.
Yeah.
So they gave success, and then they received success.
And that was
everybody's job description in our company. Consequently, we never were too busy to take a call from our coworker. We could often solve problems, you know, in 5 minutes by just simply asking the right person in the company.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, after we were purchased by a company that had 16,000 employees, they operated very differently. Something that we could solve in 5 minutes, they had to have several committee meetings to discuss.
Let's study it for a while.
Exactly. And the poor customer, or whoever was actually having the problem, was left hanging.
Yeah.
So I know that when a company has a clearly defined and articulated purpose statement and all of their stakeholders, that would be the employees, the customers, the suppliers and vendors, the shareholders or investors, the community, and anyone that's related to the business in any way. When everybody buys in, then collectively as a group, they work towards the same goal of success for everyone. And that always makes a more profitable company. I've proved it,
yeah.
And so has Ernst & Young when they funded the study that was published in the Harvard Business Review.
Back in the late 80s, there was a news story. I only heard it once, and I thought it was interesting that it was only on once, because it wasn't one of those stories that was dated. And it was, the company was Motorola. And at that time, again, as I say, this goes back to the late 1980s. And the story went like this, that Motorola was going to be laying off around 1,000 people at a particular plant. And the reason why they were going to be laying off about 1,000 people was because they had done an inventory and they had found that nearly $1 million worth of materials had just disappeared from the facility over the previous year. Now, they couldn't nail down exactly how this $1 million worth of materials, and this could have been hundreds of thousands of pieces of whatever it was, right, that totaled a million.
Mm-hmm.
But odds are this big dragnet that they threw out to cast out these thousands probably caught most of the people who were pilfering from the company. And the logic was that, well, they're not paying me enough, so hey, I'll take the stapler, I'll take this, I'll take that, and so forth. And the next thing you know, they get a pink slip. And I thought, wow, you know, so you're not doing yourself, let alone the company you're working for, any good by taking on that attitude. The radio station I worked for 15 years, I would hire people. And back then, that's one of the things that I did, was I would hire and train people. A lot of times after they'd been working there just a few weeks, I'd ask them, hey, we don't have janitorial service, so I need you to clean the bathroom, the toilet and the sink and so forth. And we all did it. I did it. Even though I was the supervisor, I did the same job that they did. And they would say, oh, you guys don't pay me enough to do that. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry, but I believe that was one of the job descriptions when you were hired. And they would, that was their attitude. And I thought, you know, I could go one of two ways. I could either buy into that, or I could start looking at ways in which I am receiving an exchange, as I put it, for the work that I do. And I started to receive an exchange because I was given an hour in the evening to just fill with interviews, just like what I'm doing here on this program. And I started to take a look at the exchange I was getting. I got the airtime. No, there was no charge. I was an employee, so they gave me the time. It wasn't sold. If it was sold, well, then I'd lose the time, and that was fine, too. I got to make the contacts. I got the interviews. The materials that were sent from the guest and or their publishing company or what have you, or the PR firm. The contact. Many of the people that I interviewed back then in the 80s and early 90s, I've had on this program on Tell Me Your Story. And so I started looking at it from that standpoint, as well as the experience that I gained in doing those interviews. So it's like, if I had to pay for all of those elements, there is no way that I could have afforded those particular pieces, if you will, of my life and my job in that regard. And I chose to go that direction. And that's really the way I look at it these days, too, is, you know, prosperity or abundance, which we want to talk about here. I want to talk about that in our next segment. It comes in so many different forms and ways. And if you're expecting it in a particular path, like your paycheck, and it doesn't come that way, and yet it comes in other ways that you're just not recognizing, you know, and that's one of those things, May, I think, that people have a hard time being grateful for.
Yeah, a lot of people limit the ways that things should happen. And what I write about in both of my books, when we talk about that daily practice, which in the gratitude formula is step one,
mm-hmm.
but in the path to wealth, it's seven steps. So that daily practice ends up allowing you to expand your vision to include receiving from multiple resources. You know, this is a hugely abundant universe, and a fair exchange of value can happen in so many different channels. And unfortunately, a lot of people do limit. I mean, I remember this one client of mine, they said, you know, they were really focused on receiving a certain amount of money, and they were limiting how that money should come in, and found out after, you know, really, lots of agony, they did get that exact amount of money, and then they found out about 6 months later that they could have, had they expanded their vision and just been open to receiving and not been so specific about how it needed to come in, there was somebody else that was going to give them even more money.
Mm.
And because of their limited words, thoughts, and emotions about how it should arrive, they went a minimum of 30% more money because they limited themselves.
Mm.
We're much more powerful than we realize. And we have to be able to use phrases that allow for additional good, which is what I call receiving your goals. We have to allow for additional good to come in from lots of unexpected channels. And the way that we do that is by using phrases like a minimum or more. Thank you so much for a minimum or more of X.
Mm-hmm.
Or thank you for my harmonious relationships, you know,
yeah,
that where we feel peaceful and happy. Not that, oh my gosh, Susie has to come up and say she's sorry for being such a butthead. No, I mean, we don't have, our job is not figuring out how stuff happens. Our job is just being grateful for that it already did happen, and then leave
mm-hmm.
the how up to this wonderful creative intelligence that's available to each and every one of us.
Yeah. You know? And this is no secret to our listeners that I basically pay for this broadcast to be put on this radio station. And so for the last 11 years, I've been doing that. And throughout those 11 years, on very sparse occasions, I've received contributions. We're not a nonprofit, so it's support for the broadcast. And recently, I actually instituted something new, and I'm still working on fine-tuning it. But letting people know, whether it's the guest, whether it's the listeners, whether I come across someone who has something that I think would be great to be promoted on the program, hey, would you be interested in supporting the work that we're doing here? I have nothing to sell. I have nothing to sell. I've heard of other guests who have shared with me that the guy that interviewed me a couple of weeks ago, you know, he wanted me to, you know, contribute X number of dollars. In exchange, he would send me this thing, which cost $75. So he was selling. I don't have that. What we're doing is we're just trying to spread the word that the possibilities are literally endless as to what we can accomplish and achieve as human beings, as individuals, but also collectively as a society. And I put that out there. And so when I created what I did as far as this email signature, those were the words I used, that I am asking. It's not a requirement. It's just a request. I'm just asking, would you be interested in supporting this radio broadcast with a minimum minimum support of $75, you know, and the program costs more than that to broadcast. But and then when I've gotten that support, because I don't expect it, you know, but when I do get it, it's like, wow, they really do believe that what I'm doing here is important enough for them to even support it with $10 or $5 or $8 or $20 or whatever it is. And
how do people donate?
They donate via PayPal. I have a page on my website. It's called Mission. It's our mission statement. And at the bottom of that statement on richarddugan.com, at the bottom of that statement, there is a link to a PayPal account that I've set up that goes straight into my PayPal account. And then, of course, I will go through the process of course, transferring it to my bank account. And I am just, I have to say that there are times I am genuinely moved by the support that I have gotten just in the last couple of months from more people than I've gotten over the last 11 years. And it's more because I really haven't asked. because I couldn't find it was something inside of me. And I've been working with this one gal to try to break through some of those blocks. Something inside of me that just didn't click in terms of my being worthy enough. It's not enough that you're doing the radio show and trying to get the word out for these folks. That's, to me, one of the biggest blocks, is that we, as individuals, and this, I should phrase this in the form of a question, isn't it true that we just don't feel worthy enough to receive whatever it is, whether it's dollars or experience or opportunity or whatever it is that we want? We don't think we're worthy, do we?
Well, I think that that goes back to what I was describing as step four mm-hmm. in the gratitude formula.
Yeah.
See, if our brain doesn't believe that we think something is possible, in an effort to protect us, it's not going to allow any of those intuitive messages to come through to take action.
Mm.
Until we elevate our mental equivalence, our belief in possibility, to be on par with what it is that we desire, then chances are we're not going to get it. Or if we do get it, it'll be short-lived. Like people that all of a sudden win the lottery. Oftentimes, many of their stories end up that they've lost it all, and they're back to where they knew how to cope.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to their mental equivalence.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have to do, I think I told you about the singing. You know, I mentioned a singer,
right.
And I'll just briefly tell you that story.
Mm-hmm.
Woman that I know, she's a scientist, a research scientist, and she decided she wanted to be a singer and get paid for it. She wanted to do that part-time. And she used the daily practice to describe her goals. She used the right words, everything. And she wasn't getting any intuitive hits to be able to take steps. She didn't see any possibility. She didn't see any doors open. She had no gut instincts, nothing. So she said, well, maybe it's not the right goal for me. Well, what I learned was that when she was growing up, of course, she has a beautiful voice, absolutely beautiful voice. Gives me goosebumps when I hear her sing. And she had told her family when she was a kid she wanted to be a professional singer. They all said that was foolish. Singers don't make money. It's a hard life. And really discouraged her, said it was fine to sing for a hobby, but never for money. So she had this belief that was tied to a very, very thick and strong neural pathway in her brain. This was her belief that had been created over a lifetime. What she had to do was strengthen a different neural pathway, and the way that she did that was keep up with her practice, her daily practice, describing her goals as complete, use that repetitive process, and she had to go out and meet some singers that were getting paid. So she went to some clubs. She went to different events. She talked to singers. She learned about their stories. What she started to recognize is, you know, there's nothing extraordinary about them. They're just normal people like me. And they're singing part-time and making money. If they could do it, I could do it. Her beliefs were shifting. That other neural pathway was strengthening. As soon as her brain recognized that she had a different belief in possibility, it started to open up some of those intuitive messages. And she found herself being asked by about four different people to go to this event. At first, she said no to the first person. She said no to the second person. And after about the third or fourth invitation, she thought, oh my gosh, is this an intuitive sign? Is this something I'm supposed to do? So she agreed and she went. At this event, from across the room, she noticed this guy, and he weaved his way through the crowd and came right up to her and said hi. And as during the conversation, he mentioned that he had agreed to put on an event at his community center, and he had a budget for entertainment. Her gut is now screaming at her. Tell him you're a singer. Tell him you're a singer. And so she blurts that out, and he says, great, come audition. She got her first paying job. It didn't pay much. I mean, it was just a little community event. But it was a start.
It almost doesn't matter how much.
And now she has this equivalent,
yeah.
This mental equivalent,
wow.
That she can be a wonderful research scientist and get paid to sing. And so consequently, she has, since then, she has regular paid singing gigs all the time. as part-time work.
Wow.
So that's what we have to do. And if we don't believe something's possible, we're never going to achieve it. Our mental equivalents won't allow it. We have to shift our beliefs, and there's a way to do that, and it's described in the gratitude formula.
We're talking with Mae McCarthy, author of The Gratitude Formula, and it's those seven steps that you can put into practice. I also like BFR. I bless you, I forgive you, I release you. I'm going to use that at every chance I get. If I have to tattoo it on the back of my hand or whatever the case might be to make that happen. We're going to continue talking more here about all of these wonderful aspects to life and living and making our world a better place for us and the people around us. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay with us. We'll be right back. See, I told you we'd be right back here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I'm here with Mae McCarthy, and we are talking, of course, about her latest work, the Gratitude Formula. And, of course, she's also written The Path to Wealth, and Gratitude Formula, of course, has those wonderful seven steps that she's already talked to us about, and we encourage you to go to her website, folks. And the website, if I have this pronounced correctly, is Bizultz, that's B-I-Z-Z-U-L-T-Z, and that's Bizultz.com. Of course, we'll be linked to her website, so if you forget it, just go to the radio show's page and click on Mae McCarthy and boom, you're going to be going right there. Accelerating Business Results, dealing with entrepreneurism and so forth. I want to talk to you now, Mae, if I may, about...
Yes, you may.
About intuition, about the importance thereof, and I'm gonna actually drop back to one of the I think what number four I believe it was step four, and you used this phrase. I thought it was really humorous at first because I never even thought about, my brain loving me or loving my brain, but our intuition, we don't really know where it resides. Some would say maybe the heart or the gut, you know, the gut feeling. I've had, I don't know if I want to call them premonitions or what have you, that I should make a left turn here as opposed to a right turn. And I've followed them. And I don't know what it was that I was, you know, why I was doing it. I kind of, when I started getting them, I just gave that up. I said, you know, it's just not... I'm never going to get the answer to that. Did I avoid an accident if I'd gone the other way? Did I meet somebody on this path that I would not have met who now is a part of my life in a business venture or whatever? But what about intuition in all of this process as far as gratitude? Is the gratitude part more a state of mind as opposed to our intuitive self?
Well, gratitude, I mean, lots and lots of studies have shown, and I outline a whole bunch of them in my book, but lots of studies have shown that when you are using gratitude, when you are choosing to be grateful, there are physical and psychological benefits that you receive. You reduce stress, you sleep better, overall your health and well-being is improved. And like I said, from Texas Health Science Center to different research organizations around the world have done study after study, and many of these are outlined in my book that show the benefits of using gratitude as a practice. But in addition, I believe that gratitude makes you magnetic.
Ooh.
Magnetic to whatever it is that you're putting your attention on. And I think, you know, just to give you a cute little quote, it was Oprah Winfrey who said, when you're thankful or grateful for what you have, it tends to grow and you have more. But if you are constantly focusing on lack and what you don't have, you'll have that experience instead. And lots of successful people, myself included, have proved that. whatever we're putting our attention on, when we add gratitude to that, it tends to magnetize and grow whatever it is that we have our attention on. So when we want something, we have to use the right words that describe what we want as though it's already complete. We need to describe the outcome with gratitude. What then happens is our subconscious and this intuitive guidance, which I don't know where it comes from, which is one of the reasons I call it spiritual, but there's a source of it for it, and it's available to each and every one of us. Albert Einstein referred to it as the intuitive mind. He said we have a rational mind and we have an intuitive mind. So that intuitive mind is trying to point out and illuminate possibilities for us to take steps. Those possibilities, that those instructions from that intuitive mind show up in a number of different ways. Sometimes it's a strong thought that flies into your head out of the blue to contact someone, to go somewhere, or to do something. I once had a intuitive thought to drive across town at 9 o'clock at night in Cleveland to a different grocery store than the one that I knew was 5 minutes away.
Well, that's just crazy talk.
Well, and what ended up happening is I ran into somebody who was not returning any of my phone calls or requests for an appointment.
Oh, wow.
And here we are, face-to-face, and before the end of the conversation, I'm invited to make a presentation, and it resulted, after several more presentations, in a contract worth over $400,000.
Oh!
So what I was focusing on as my goal was, I'm so grateful that we now have a minimum or more of $400,000 in increased revenue to grow our business, to serve our customers more, in better ways, to grow our employees, to have resources that they need to do their jobs with great satisfaction and fulfillment. I mean, it was to bless everyone. It was
sure.
to benefit and help everyone that was related to our company succeed. And I had a strong thought to go to a different grocery store. I mean, that makes no sense. And I remember in 1994 having this very vivid picture of my sister's face. I mean, it just flew into my head while I was in the middle of a business meeting. So I knew, having practiced this a while, that meant I needed to contact her, and I was close to her office, so I just stopped by. And here in this conversation, she said, "God, I'm so glad you're here. I have a computer problem. You can help me fix it." And I did. But while I was there, she noticed a teeny, tiny, tiny little dot on the outside of my right leg, which I thought was a freckle. I was raised in Hawaii, and I'm fair, so I have lots of freckles. She said she didn't feel it was a freckle and asked for me to see her dermatologist. I told her, you know, don't worry. I mean, I was thinking, I'm just going to tell her, don't worry about it. I've had this. It hasn't grown. And all of a sudden, my gut hurt.
Mm.
So that's another way that you get intuitive messages, is feelings in your body. So my gut hurt, and I thought, well, you know, what's it going to hurt to go see a dermatologist? So I made the appointment. The dermatologist said it was nothing. It was too small. It couldn't possibly be anything for me to worry about, and told me to go home. And as I was about to heed his advice, my gut hurt again. And I said, you know, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but could you just cut that off and have a diagnosis and
do a biopsy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he put, I mean, he barely could get one stitch in. I mean, that's how small it was, right?
Yeah.
I came back a week later to a diagnosis of malignant melanoma, Clark's level 3.
Wow.
I know. So, but my goal that I'd been writing about every single day was, I'm so grateful that I am whole, healthy, and complete, and that every function and cell in my body is operating in the perfection with which it was designed. I'm grateful that I can easily move through life in a pain-free body.
Mm-hmm.
So because I was focused on my goal with gratitude, the outcome, things lined up to make it so. And here's the deal, Richard. You've proved this. I mean, think about the last time you might have bought a car or some large purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you're like most people, you think about it, you imagine it, you maybe even narrow down the different models to one or two models, and maybe you even go and test drive it. You are constantly thinking about owning that car, what the outcome of owning that car is going to be, with gratitude. before you bought it. Don't you start to notice that car driving around everywhere? You never noticed that car before it was a goal and you were excited about having it.
It's kind of interesting you bring that up, because when we bought our latest vehicle back in 2012, it's a 2007 Volvo. And, of course, I had always heard, you know, that you can get 200,000, maybe 300,000 miles if you take care of it, you know. Okay, well, that sounds like a plan, you know. And my dad always told me, and this was even before I could drive. I didn't even start driving until I was 38. That he says, you know, if you do nothing more than you do the regular oil, lube, and filter, okay, then, you know, when you're making the payments and when you're finished making the payments, you won't have to make any more payments as far as general maintenance. Now, we've done more than that over the course of time, but nonetheless, we do that. And the thing is, over 100,000 miles, and when it was under, I would tell people this, and say, oh, you haven't even broken it in yet, you know. And here's what's really interesting. When my wife and I went to look at the vehicle, this kind of goes to what you were talking about. She was quite content with and happy with the vehicle, but I had some misgivings. My brain, the intellect, got in the way. And by the time we got home, it was even before we got home, we were going up the hill to our home. Before we even got home, I'm going, you know, maybe we should take that deal. It really sounds like a good... So as soon as we got home, I called them. And I said, we want to come back tomorrow and get the vehicle, if the deal is still on the table, which of course it was. We could have turned around at that point. If there was a place on the mountain road to turn around, we could have turned around and gone back and gotten it at that time. And it still wound up to be an excellent purchase. Now, we are both dreaming about an RV because we want to take this show, as well as ourselves, on the road.
I love it.
And so we're talking about one of these RVs, not necessarily one of these giant big bus ones because, well, but more the smaller size, like with the van or truck front, you know. And we put our dog in there and we pack it up, and it serves two purposes. Number one, we get to take off on weekends for overnights and things like that, which we have not done in 10 or 11 years because of all of our animals. But also because we would be able to pack it with the things that we really feel important. And if we have another wildfire and we are asked to evacuate, one of us jumps into the RV, the other jumps into the car, and we're off and we have a place to stay. And we've got, you know, we have our room and board with us, as it were. So, you know, it serves two purposes. But the main purpose, of course, is the ability to travel the country, if not the world. I've shared this dream, by the way, with a lot of with folks on this program. I could literally, I've already kind of mapped it out. If I start at the tip of South America and work my way up through South and Central America into North America, Canada, and in the wintertime cross the Bering Strait, I can then go to Russia and China and Southeast Asia and India and Pakistan, go into Africa down to the southern tip and so forth, and work my way back up, interviewing, and then into Europe. Interviewing people who are making a difference in this world, who have the same perspective that you and I have, that there's more. You know, I heard this about abundance, May. If you know the law of attraction, right, and how it was promoted in The Secret several years ago?
Sure.
And you just, you know, you basically tell the universe, I want this or that or the other thing, you know, and you can attract it to you and so forth. And the thing that always perplexed a lot of folks was, but, you know, I don't know that there's enough. It's like, not everybody wants the same thing. Not everybody wants a gold Cadillac. So it's not like there aren't enough of those to go around, if that were the case, if that was what they wanted. Because everybody wants something different. So there's more than enough to go around.
You know, it's really interesting that you bring up The Secret, because my tagline for the gratitude formula is that success is a system, not a secret.
Oh, absolutely. By the way.
And what I believe is that we live in an incredibly abundant universe. I mean, even, you know, 25 years ago, we weren't all walking around with mobile computers in our hands.
Absolutely.
We are so innovative and creative, and when we need to create more, we do.
Yeah.
And so there is no limit to the abundance of this universe, and people achieving their goals and experiencing more abundance does not diminish anyone else's capability of receiving the same or more.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We are creators. We will always continue to create, and nature is right there with us, helping us to create as well.
You know, it's interesting that you phrase that because, you know, I take a look at the macro view, the cosmos, and what has been created, and we don't know yet. We haven't come across another planet with beings who have achieved what we've achieved. I mean, I find it the height of arrogance that we seem to think we're the only sentient, conscious beings in the universe. I really do believe that there are others like us out there somewhere. But until we find them, you know, we're still going to speculate. But the fact is that look at everything that's been created. Supposedly, and again, I don't know what the science really says, but supposedly almost out of nothing. You know, they say the Big Bang. Well, but where did that come from? You know, well, we won't go into that. And they say that it's continuing to expand. Mm-hmm. And continuing to, I mean, where did all this matter, whether it's planets and all of that, where did all that come from? Well, you know, it's like it doesn't really matter. It's here. This is what we have to work with. And it's absolutely incredible. Yeah. Absolutely.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think that for both of my books, The Path to Wealth and The Gratitude Formula, my hope and my prayer is that when people read these, that they realize that intuition and these laws of goal attainment are completely unemotional. This law of intention, this law of attraction, this law of just like the law of gravity. I mean, these are not emotional. If I hold up a Chihuly vase and let my hand go, it's going to crash to the floor and break 100% of the time. Well, the same thing happens with us. Whatever we put our words, thoughts, and emotions on, with belief in possibility, will manifest 100% of the time. Whether it's what we want or whether it's what we say we don't want, either one, they're going to manifest.
Yeah, it's funny.
So we have to be extremely careful about the use of our words, our thoughts, and our emotions. And if we're filling up with things that are not serving us, including unforgiveness, anger, worry, disbelief, pain, injustice. If we are focusing on those things, they'll grow. But if we're focusing on the life that we really want to live with freedom and perfect health and right relationships and financial abundance and great recreation and a deep connection to that inner wisdom, then we'll have that instead.
I bless you, I forgive you, I release you, folks. Don't forget that. Remember it. It's going to become a mantra that you're not going to want to be without. Like I said, I may have it tattooed on the back of my hand to remind me every time my fist might clench and frustration over da-da-da-da, whatever it is. As a matter of fact, as we were driving into work today, we came across at least two clusters as far as cars are concerned. Nobody was hurt or injured, no accidents, but it was a situation that's like, it opened up in my mind that phrase, you just can't fix stupid. But it's like, well, why do you care? Okay, why does it matter? You're still safe, you're still secure in your vehicle, everybody's okay. And so this goes to one of the other steps in your seven steps there about being patient. All right, so the person in front of me is oblivious to the fact that there are other people around him, and he's making a left turn into a place that he has no business making a left turn, because if he'd stayed on the main road, he could have made a right turn and not backed traffic up 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 cars, okay? You're fine. And as soon as and when he moves, and he will, he's not going to park. He's not parking there. That's not his driveway. He'll move, and then you may proceed. So be patient. You also said something else, May, I would like for you to reiterate before we wrap up the program, and that is the fact that words have power. I mean, you've talked a lot about that already. But
yeah, and we have to be really careful about how we use words. I mean, we're careful how we use electricity, right?
Most of the time, yes.
No, I mean, we know that if we plug a plug in,
yeah,
chances are we're going to be able to turn on a lamp.
Right.
But we don't undo the cover and just stick our finger into live wires.
Correct.
You know, because we know we'll be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that about the law of gravity. You know, we can use that for our benefit, but we're not going to jump off of a high treetop or a building because we know we'll be hurt,
mm-hmm,
because of the law of gravity. Well, if people understood how powerful their words were in manifesting what they desire or what they don't desire. I mean, how many times have you heard in your life where people say, well, you know, you got to plan for a emergency or rainy day fund? What they're doing is planning for something awful to happen. Or how about oh my gosh, this thing happened, so let me think about all the worst case scenarios so I can plan to react to those worst case scenarios. Well, what about planning for the best case scenario,
mm-hmm,
instead? And what about instead of a rainy day fund, you create a savings account, a, mm-hmm, retirement account, a vacation fund?
How about a sunny day account?
A sunny day fund. Yeah, so people, we've been so conditioned as a society, as in the example of my salesperson who used to say, gosh, I hope I'm not late to my appointment and make a bad impression.
Mm-hmm.
She really thought what she was proclaiming was that she wanted to be on time and make a good impression. But we've been so conditioned to talk about what we don't want, thinking that we're talking about what we want, and then we're surprised,
yeah,
when we get what we don't want.
And by the way, those words come from thoughts. And I just throw this one example out. When my wife and I are driving down the hill into the city, into Santa Barbara, once we get to the bottom of the hill, we start hitting the streetlights, right? And many times as we're coming down, we'll hit a red light and then it'll green and we move on, and red light and green and move on. And now, you know, and that's just normal day-to-day traffic, right?
Right.
There are two conditions under which that scenario is sort of bypassed. When, and we've had this happen a few times, we haven't even been thinking about it. And all of a sudden, we get to the bottom of the hill, and from the first streetlight signal intersection, all the way to the last signaled intersection, because we're not even thinking about it, we're chatting or listening to some music, we would hit every single green light. And then on those days when we're in a hurry and we're thinking about, oh, we got to be there by 8 o'clock, and oh my gosh, it's 5 minutes of and we're still 5 miles away, we're not going to make it, we would hit every single red light. We didn't say a word, but the anxiety and the thoughts, we're sort of generating this. So if I, and I do this all the time now, if I start feeling as though I got to get there, we're in a hurry, we better hope we hit every green light, I already know we're going to hit every red light. And that's going to frustrate me even more. And then I go spinning off into oblivion somewhere. So now I just say, you know, we'll get there when we get there, and we'll get there in one piece and safe, and everybody else will be safe, and it's all good. But again, sometimes not a word is spoken. It's just that thought energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our life is created partly through words, thoughts, and emotions. I mean, stuff happens that we still don't understand. That's part of life.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff happens, and, mm-hmm. and it's unfortunate, and that's when we get to make a choice on how to view it and how much it affects us.
Yeah.
We choose that.
Absolutely.
But it's my belief that we can enable more intuitive and subconscious illumination by focusing our words, thoughts, and emotions on what we want desired outcomes to be. Not the how that we get there, but the what that we're experiencing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I'm so grateful to have been able to spend this time with you.
Mae McCarthy, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program as well to share your thoughts and feelings and the work that you're doing through the two books. Of course, we had you back on here, had you here in July of 2016. I can't believe it's been 2 years. And talking about the path to wealth. And now we're talking about the gratitude formula. And a reminder to our listeners, her website, we encourage you to find out more about what she is doing. And that website is Bizzultz, BIZZULTZ.com. And we hope that you will investigate further. We're going to be linked to your website as well, Mae. And we, again, are very appreciative. Two things. One, I extend this to all of my guests. Should you ever find yourself out here on the Central Coast in Santa Barbara, we would love to have you in studio to talk more about this. It's a lot of fun, but it's also very important for people to begin the process of really taking this in. I love using the word from a book I finally finished, took me forever, A Stranger in a Strange Land. We need to grok this stuff. We need to make it a part of every cell of our being so that we don't have to worry about these mantras anymore, that it's just a normal course of our day where we don't even allow those little things to enter our being, if you will, so we can just keep right on floating on through and doing the things that we do that are helping ourselves and other people.
Well, I will be sure to let you know when I'm in that area. I think our family reunion is going to be there, actually outside of Solvang.
Oh, yes. Right over the hill from us, yes.
Yeah, in 2019.
All right. Well, we'll keep that available in 2019 and look forward to having a chance to chat with you, if not before then, via phone. And again, I thank you so much. And the final three questions that I have for you, you may have addressed throughout the program, but I'll ask them directly to you. And again, thank you. First question is, who is Mae McCarthy?
No, that's a great question, because she keeps changing. she is a happy, giving, helpful, hugely prosperous, and healthy person. I am having a blast as a professional speaker, an author, a angel investor, philanthropist. I just started last week as a Unity online radio show host.
Wow. And, congratulations.
Really, I'm living my purpose, which is to elevate prosperity and freedom for all, to bless others and to be blessed.
Wonderful. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to help people to achieve whatever they want. I want to help people recognize how powerful they are and to use that power to create their wonderful lives.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Well, it's always been since I was 12 to bless others and be blessed. But what I'm doing with my work right now is to elevate prosperity and freedom for all.
Very exciting. And again, we look forward to having you back on the program, hopefully very soon.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.